Hello, welcome. Hope you're having a good day. This is the Mastering Portrait Photography.com podcast. And in this and probably the next couple of podcasts, I thought it was high time I started answering some questions we've had sent in. Hi, I'm Paul Wilkinson from MasteringPortraitPhotography.com, and what a pleasure it is to be back again recording. Today I'm recording from our attic in the studio. We actually have an attic that is designed specifically to be quiet, so I thought it might be an interesting space to turn into a studio, at least to see if we could work it as a little bit more of an audio studio, to try and make the best out of the microphones and things that we have. As of this point in time, I haven't yet invested in really good recording kit, so I'm doing my best with fairly limited equipment, trying to make it sound right and trying to kill the echoes, the sibilance in my voice, and trying to make the whole thing sound as slick as we can. I'm not entirely certain how it should sound. I am fairly convinced that echoey walls and a telephone ringing in the background doesn't help. So here I am, stood on my own, up in this fantastic, I call it an attic, but it's not really. It was a design space. Our studio, for those who don't know, is the original architectural practice for a very famous architect called Peter Aldington, OBE. And in this building, they designed, it must be about 3 meters square. It's an attic space. They called it the Think Tank. The Think Tank, which is essentially an upstairs area that you have to come up a ladder to get into. It's got cupboards and power and desks and things in it, but you still have to come up a ladder to get into it. And when you shut the door, quite literally a trap door, you can't hear anything up here. Nobody can hear me downstairs. I can't hear anything upstairs. And it's a space in which the architects would come and find some time and space to think and to not be interrupted. And I think that's a wonderful idea, and I'm starting to work out how to use it. And it turns out the best thing I can do with it right now is to use it as a sound recording area. And once I get it tuned up and get some sound kill in, I think it's going to be the perfect spot for recording these podcasts. Anyway, on a more historical note, what a week it's been. Summary of the week, amazing, of course. You'll rarely hear me say very much else. I am inveterately cheerful at the best of times, but at the end of the week in which it was the photography show, one of the highlights of my year, I'm always going to be a little bit chipper. So forgive me if I'm sounding a bit bouncier than normal. But it has been an incredible show for me. I think I was presenting 5 times on 5 stages, which is always a hoot. And I'll talk a little bit more about some of those things in a moment. But also doing critiques. I love doing image critiques. They're something that I think are very, very important. But it's important to be both critical, hence the term critique, but also encouraging. And to find the great in everything, because there's always something. Nobody takes and then produces and then brings an image for a critique without there being something in there that they think is worthy. There's very few images I see that don't have something about them. And so I spent 4 or 5 hours, I think, over the duration of the show, sitting with different people, talking about their images, looking for the parts of those images where they really shine. The thing that they do that is magical compared to, you know, the average. Whether it's about, they have a thing about light, whether they have a thing about form, whether they have a thing about the eyes or tone or black and white and the contrast you get. I don't know. It's always something, great cropping or just an unusual take on a subject I've seen before. And what an absolute honour to do it is. And also how inspiring it is. I mean, maybe people don't realise that, but when they show us images, as an experienced photographer, we too take something away. It's not just the person you're sitting with. And if at any time you're critiquing and you're not taking something away, you're not looking hard enough. You know, if you get so blasé with your photography that when you look at somebody else's image, you can't find something to inspire you, you're probably not looking hard enough, in my opinion anyway. So it was an absolute thrill to be there. I was there mostly with the Master Photographers Association, of which I'm a fellow. So I was on one of the stages in the business school talking about pricing. Now, I have to admit to being a little bit surprised that when I arrived and went onto the stage, it was a big room. There was 300 odd people in it and it was packed. Now, usually when you do a presentation on something as dry as pricing, you expect the audience to be fairly specialist. You expect it to be the people who really, really want to know about the business aspects. And I'm sure those people in that room did, but there was an awful lot of them, which was absolutely brilliant. So it's always lovely. If you're going to do a presentation, it's much nicer to have a big audience than a half-empty room, always. And I think the only caveat to my thing was that I was a bit concerned that at the end of the day, you can't answer the question, how do you price? Because it's completely down to you, your business, the area you're in, the quality of your imagery, the type of client you're wishing to attract, the kind of business model you're wishing to run. And in the end, the way we approached the presentation was that we couldn't really talk about price on its own. What we had to talk about was experience. And it's always about experience in this part of the market. My job as a portrait photographer is essentially to create emotion, because that's what my clients on the whole are buying into. Now, I know that's not quite the same when I'm doing corporate portraiture or when I'm doing actors' headshots, but it certainly is for the rest of it. And even when I'm working as a corporate photographer or as an actors' headshot photographer, I'm still looking for those beautiful moments of engagement with the client, whoever that client is. And so at the end of the day, you can't entirely talk about pricing. What we had to talk about was the business, how you attract clients, how you keep clients. More importantly, so many people talk about client acquisition, getting leads. And of course, acquisition is meaningless on its own. Retention is a far more interesting topic because it's much, much cheaper to hold on to a client than it is to find a client. Always educate your client, always keep your client, always do a good job, exceed their expectations, be the photographer they want to come back to as much as you're the photographer they want to go to. Anyway, the photography show is amazing. I also got to stand and talk on the Graphy Studio stand. For those of you who know Graphy Studio, you'll know they are simply the best album supplier in the world, certainly as far as I'm concerned. I love their albums. I love the workflow with them. I love the service I get in the UK. It is second to none. And I love the product and I love the reaction our clients get when I hand it over to them. And so it is a real privilege to be on their stage twice. The second day was talking about portrait photography, which of course is my natural home. But the first day I was part of four photographers. So Scott Johnson, David Stanbury, Karen Massey and myself, all bringing different angles on the business of wedding photography to a packed room. And it was hilarious. It was very funny. Between the four of us get on really, really well. I've known the other three for quite a long time. And it's always funny when we're together because we have such different views. And I think probably I came across as the Jack D of wedding photography, because at the end of the day, I'm not really a wedding photographer. I'm a portrait photographer. I just happen to be a portrait photographer at your wedding. So the other photographers are very much more about wedding photography as I possibly would know it traditionally. And I'm so not. I'm much more from a portrait photographer's point of view, partly because that's what I love more than anything else, but partly because that's what stops me being nervous. I get quite nervous. I'm shooting a wedding tomorrow and I always get quite nervous in the run into a wedding. And what keeps me absolutely solid and confident is knowing that really all I'm doing is creating another couple of hundred portraits. I'm going to create some intimate portraits. I'm going to create some fashion-y portraits. I'm going to create some candid portraits. I'm going to create some posed portraits. I'm going to create a lot of portraits. And I'll create to photograph some details and the buildings and everything else. And at some point, I'll do a proper run-through on our wedding photography approach. But it was just brilliant to be standing there in conjunction with Graphy Studio. So a couple of days of absolute mayhem. I was exhausted at the end of it, but so completely exhilarated as to being true. And that happens every year I go to the photography show. I just love it. So if there's one point I could make about photography shows, seminars, anything like that, is go to as many as you can, because every time you go, you'll learn something new and you'll come away feeling inspired. Of that, I am certain. Anyway, that was the beginning of the week. And at the end of the week, we had our studio completely ripped out so that the electricians could come in and test all of our kit. And I hate that day. We have to do it every year. We have to get electricians in. So we get those lovely little green stickers on the back of every bit of mains kit that says it's safe. Pat testing, it is called, and I loathe it, because bits are just, I came back in and it looked like I'd been burgled, only somehow they'd left everything. There was computers out, there was drawers out, all of the cables were out. It was like being hung, drawn and quartered and having your intestines shown in front of you, except the intestines are the cables and kit from our studio. I'm still finding things that aren't working because they weren't powered up in the right sequence. And I'm still finding things. Even this morning I came in and one of the hard drives wasn't talking to me because in the process of moving it out, they dislodged the network cable. It took me ages to find it. So that rounded off the week, but what a fantastic week it's been. So anyway, let's go to an email I received this week. Now, we get a lot of these emails from students all over the world asking a series of questions for their projects. Sometimes it's just questions on their own. Sometimes it's they want to see some pictures from behind the scenes. Sometimes it's a mix of the two. Sometimes we get referenced in various ways. But it's a really lovely thing to do. And normally I sit down and I type out the answers. This time I'm doing it differently. This time I'm going to spread the answers out over probably a couple of podcasts to keep the time short, but we'll see how we go. So here's the email. Dear Mr. Paul Wilkinson, always a good start. I do like an email that actually starts with my name. For anyone who's thinking of emailing in, please don't put dear sir or hi, because I know that email's gone out to 25 other people and I get about 50 emails a day to go through. I do not have time to filter out the emails that people have blanket emailed. And if it starts with hi or something nondescript, I will assume you don't know who I am and I'm highly unlikely to answer it. However, this starts really well. Dear Mr. Paul Wilkinson, I'm a student photographer here in Baltimore, Maryland, USA, and I've chosen you and your studio to be my subject on photographers who live in a place of my family origin. I'm supposed to create a story about you on PowerPoint to show my classmates, and it should be about 15 minutes long. I have a few questions I would like to ask, so if you have time to answer them, then that would make my day. Here they are. Well, here we go. Hopefully, I am going to make somebody's day. She doesn't say in the email whereabouts in this area she lives or her family have come from her family origin. I suppose, generically, an awful lot of the people who live in the US have come from somewhere in Europe, if you trace back far enough. She hasn't given me any clues, so I'm not sure I can say, well, this is where your family home is. I took some pictures there. So I can't be very specific. But nonetheless, here are a set of questions. There are 20 questions. There are 16 questions. I've got them printed out, and I will work my way through them, and let's see how we get on. Question number one. How old were you when you first got interested in visual arts? So I'm reading these questions out exactly as they're typed, okay? It's not quite the English I would use, but nonetheless, how old are you when you first got interested in visual arts? Well, I'm guessing that's a little bit like saying to a piano player, how old are you when you first got interested in music? You just are. I can't remember the first time I picked up a pen, but I remember always having pencils and pens and art stuff around me all my life. I don't remember a time when I didn't. So my mum trained slightly later on in life when I was at school, in my secondary school. She trained as an artist, trained as an art teacher, rather, and variously did art projects. And I would go into college with her during my school holidays and sit with her in the art class and doodle and draw. I've always done it, and I think it's just in me. I don't know if it's something I can identify as start point, but I was always interested in the drawings and the paintings of people. My grandfather was an oil artist and also an etcher. She used to do these beautiful etchings. And I'm assuming that it kind of came down through the family. It was just in my blood, was always there. So in answer to that, probably from as early as I could walk and talk, I was making pictures and noise in broadly equal measure to one degree or another. So question number two, did you study photography in college? No. That's not a particularly nice answer, is it? It's not a particularly useful answer, is it? But no, I didn't. I studied industrial design, actually, in college. So a little bit of history is I was a musician. I was a professional drummer. Even then, as soon as I could drive, I became a member of the musicians' union and I would go and play percussion for the shows and orchestras in the area. It was good money because it was musicians' union session rates. I really loved it. I wasn't particularly gifted, but I was good enough. I could sight read music and I could play quietly. And if you're a drummer and you can sight read music and play quietly and keep time, I suppose that's a core requirement. Actually, the opportunities were there. However, I said this to my school careers advisors and they said, oh no, you can't be a musician. That's not a living. That's a hobby. I said, well, I'm already earning money at it and I'm a member of the musicians union. They said, no, Mr. Wilkinson. Well, you know, you can't possibly be a musician. You need to be an engineer. And I said, well, all right, I'll accept not musician. I'd like to go and study art and design then, please. And they said, oh, no, Mr. Wilkinson, no. Art and design isn't a career. That's a hobby. If you turned it into a career, you'll never enjoy it as much as you do while it's a hobby. You need to go and study engineering. And in the end, having been sort of channeled towards engineering, I found a university degree course at the same university my parents had been to that was called industrial design, which had enough of the art and design side of it to keep me happy, but I also had enough of the engineering and mechanical and manufacturing side of it to keep the people around me happy that I was going to do something that they thought I'd be good at. As it turns out, I don't think that was necessarily the right decision, but equally, I don't think it was the wrong decision because I loved nearly all of it. There was very little of the course I didn't thoroughly enjoy. And one of the things that came up through that was I have a natural affinity with computers. And in the end, when I got my degree in industrial design, instead of leaving and becoming a designer, I stayed at the university and I did a 4-year PhD in neural computing. Cajonan feature maps, to be precise. If you want to be really bored, need something to help you go to sleep, I'll read you out bits of my thesis at some point. So no, I didn't study photography at college. Many other things, and I'm all for studying, but not photography. And on that note, incidentally, if you could study one thing to be a successful photographer, at least from a commercial point of view, I would suggest it's business and finance you study, something like that. Something that's going to give you a head for how the business aspects work. Because the trick here has always been, I need this to pay properly, because if it pays properly, then I can continue to create pictures. I look at it that way. I don't look at it as a prior, oh my God, I hate the fact I've got to charge for it. No, I charge for it because that provides for me and my family, and it means I can carry on taking pictures. I get paid today, I'll take more pictures tomorrow. I get paid tomorrow, I'll take more pictures the day after that. If at any time it stops paying, I have to stop taking pictures and it has to start being a hobby. And I've never wanted that to happen. So I treat the financials of our company as carefully as I treat the artistry of it. It's really, really important. All right, so question number 3. Which fine artists inspire you? All of them. Frankly, all of them. I have some favourites. My favourite artist is Rembrandt and all of that kind of Dutch period. Just beautiful understanding of light and tone. Really dark images, but always they somehow capture the glow of the light. And I've always been fascinated by it. I'm not an expert in any of that stuff, but if I see a Rembrandt exhibition, I will go and look at it. There was one on, I'm lucky enough to work with a cruise company, a luxury cruise company. And I travel around the world taking portraits of people. And this last few months, we've been from LA to Sydney. And when we arrived in Sydney, there we were, the Sydney Art Museum had an exhibition of Rembrandt and the Dutch masters. Oh my goodness, was that worth the money? So even though I'm in Australia, I'm as far away from Holland as you can get. What was I interested in going to see? I went to see an exhibition on the Dutch masters and it was brilliant. And just their touch with tone, absolutely love it. But I love many, many artists. And get very excited about any art gallery that I can go to and have a look at portrait painting and portrait photography in particular. So, number 4, how old were you when you decided to open your own photography business? Well, I didn't really decide to open my own photography business. Life decided it with me. So, give you a bit of background. We have a couple of kids, and in the process of having children, you go to prenatal classes. So they are all about what it's going to be like having a baby and the experience and the process. And it's a very odd thing. However, being thrown in amongst all these people, we met a few families that we really got on with. And one family in particular, the mum-to-be owned a marketing company. And after we'd had children, she came round to the house to spend some time. The two babies would, you know, I don't know, sit and crawl together. And I was at work at this point and Sarah was on maternity leave. And so the community that built up around having children meant that people went to each other's houses for coffee and talked about what they were suffering and how the children were developing. However, on our walls at home, we had some personal photographs that I'd taken for the family. And she saw them, thought it was a professional photographer, asked Sarah for the details of that professional photographer, probably looked a bit astonished when Sarah fell about laughing and realised that it was not a professional photographer at all, but it was just me taking pictures and putting them in frames on the wall. And so I got a phone call at work saying, oh, you'll never guess. Somebody thinks your photography's all right. And that was the trigger point, because that marketing company helped me put together my portfolio. They helped me work out some pricing, and they commissioned my first couple of jobs. And so from not thinking there was anything in it, not really thinking I was good enough, I went from that to working as a professional photographer almost overnight. Now, of course, the transition took longer than that, but I was about 32 when that happened. So Harriet was about 18 months old, and I was about 32 when I decided that actually, do you know what? Possibly given somebody's already asked me and is paying me to take some photographs, there might be something in it. And that's when I started. Question number five. Did you intern first before you went out on your own? No, I didn't. I'm not sure that's the right decision. And I've always had a slight insecurity about my work. I've never been told off for being insecure about what we do here. But I think part of it is the route I came here. I went from being an IT consultant, a business management consultant, straight into being a professional photographer. I didn't do any training. I didn't do an internship. I didn't really do an apprenticeship of any sort other than the years I'd spent with a cameraman. I mean, to be honest, I've had a camera in my hand since I was about 7 years old. So it's not that I can't take a picture, but I always felt like there was something I should have learned. What has happened over the years is I've realized that probably there wasn't. It would have been great to see other people work. It would have influenced what I do. But I've come at it very much as, well, this is what I do. It's the way I've always done it. And I really love it. And it seems to create pictures that people like. That's not to say I haven't learned lots of different things from lots of different photographers. I network all of the time. I spend a lot of time going to, if there's a photographer going to any one of the regional meetings for, let's say, the Master Photographers Association, I will go and see it. Because I always come away with something, some hint, some nugget, some tip, something I'd not thought of that will excite me and make me want to go and pick up the camera tomorrow and try it. You obviously can't do everything. Some stuff won't work for you, but there are plenty of things I've picked up along the way. So although I didn't do an internship, I feel like I'm constantly learning. Question number six, how did you study the art of posing? Well, I didn't. Again, I mean, I'm hoping this doesn't come across really negative. I just haven't studied. I'm just a rank upstart, picked up a camera and pointed it at things and seemed to be able to take a picture. I didn't make a point of going and studying posing. I do read people, though. And this stems from my fascination with body language. I just think it's really interesting. And I love the way people position themselves, and you can read people. I mean, you know, examples that we were taught them when I was at Accenture to do with body language. If somebody's got their arms folded, for instance, we were taught that might well be a blocking signal, in which case you have to get them to open up. If they start to gently echo you, they like you. You're making headway. And we've all heard these things. And they're linked to NLP, neuro-linguistic processing. So you can go look that one up. But it's all about using your body and your tone to help with the relationship that you're forming with the person in front of you. And I do that naturally. I've never really had to learn too much of it, but I'm fascinated by it. And so when I'm working with someone in the studio in particular, I will look at the way they stand or they sit, and I'll talk. I'll actually spend more time talking than I do shooting. And when they've started to relax, then I can see how they sit naturally, because they will. It just happens. Then all I do is fine tune it. So that if they sit naturally with their arms folded and you can tell by the look in their eyes they're having a nice time, then I'll just use their arms folded. It's not a problem. If they stand with their hands in their pockets, same again. Things that I have learned along the way are tips about positioning fingers and hands, for instance. Go and look at any classic art gallery for those tips, because the fine artists, Baroque is my particular thing. I love a Baroque painting, pretty much from any artist of the time. They had time to paint the hand positions. It wasn't an instantaneous thing like a photographer has to. They could paint it from the imagination and sketches. And so they generally got hand positioning really beautifully elegant. Something about the way they formed the finger shapes, the way they formed the hands and the limbs. Very, very elegant and very simple. But of course, they have the advantage of being able to sketch it and paint it over a long period of time, whereas we have to catch it in 180th of a second or something. But it's a really lovely place to learn. Also, go and look at choreography, great dance choreography. Love working with choreographers and dancers, because they bring posing to the studio. I don't have to do very much except contain it. And you learn an awful lot from that. So I've learned posing by watching real people rather than by learning how to pose people. I mean, there are some rules you learn, you know, every limb should be broken, try not to keep the elbow closed in on the waist because it'll flesh out the bicep, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You learn all of those. But on the whole, you look at people, you look at their body, you look at their limbs, you look at their expressions, and you maneuver everything in a way that is sympathetic to them, but also makes the very best of them. So question number, this is useful, or else I'm just talking to myself. Question number seven, how old are you and how old were you when you decided to start your photography business? Well, there you go. That's linked to question number four. I am 49 years old at the time of recording this. I don't feel like I'm 49. I feel like I'm 21, except for the fact I don't have to wear glasses because, of course, as anyone sort of reaches about 50, he realised that I now need glasses to do certain things. But other than that, I don't feel, I really hope I don't look 49, but 49 I am. And when did I start my photography business? Well, I'll answer the second part slightly differently for the first part. So I was 32 when someone first approached me, but it was in 2008 that I went full time. So that is 10 years ago this year. And it's been pretty rapid, to be honest. We've built this business up. We've been reasonably smart about it. Every year we've got bigger and bigger and bigger. Every year I think we've pushed the quality of the photography as well as the quality of the service and consequently the pricing that goes with it, which means we actually run a very slick, very smart business. That's not to say we're not still learning. Even now we're re-engineering the business. Every 5 years or so we tweak it, change it, do something completely different with it. And at the end of the year, when all of that's in place, and I will talk to you about what we've done. Okay, are there particular photographers you study to learn about lighting and posing? Well, my favourite photographer is David Bailey. There's something about his work in the late 60s and early 70s that is just incredible. I don't know what it is about it, probably the simplicity of it, but it always feels like in his pictures there's a relationship there between him, or the viewer really, and the person who's sitting for him. Always. There's always something. There's a connection. And that's actually what I love. There's a great book that is kicking around called Vogue Covers. It's just a small book of many of the greatest covers from the Vogue magazine over the years. And I found that book on a bookshelf once. I can't remember where it was. Anyway, it's the most battered book I have in the studio because it's chock full of fantastic portraits. I mean, some are a bit fashion-y for me, but it just has the most incredible images in it, many of them from Bailey and his peer group of the time. So that's the era. I love that sort of late 60s, early 70s era. Okay, so on question number eight, which is halfway through these questions, I'm going to pause and put the rest into another podcast, partly because I could do with a glass of water, partly because we're trying to keep these podcasts to about 10, 15 minutes, which makes them easily digestible rather than great monolithic pieces of audio. Although when we're planning on doing some interviews in the future, they will undoubtedly be longer, but hopefully because they're full of different voices, they won't feel just like me banging on about various bits and pieces. So until next time, remember, be kind to yourself, be nice, be creative. Take care.